Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
Today we're going to be playing The Quacks of Quedlinburg, designed by...
Quedlinburg?
Quedlinburg.
We should probably just go the shut up, sit down route and just call it Quack.
Yeah,
we'll just... The Quacks. It's designed by Wolfgang Warsch of Gonshong Clever, The Mind, and Doplet So Clever. The artist is Wolfgang Warsch. He's very talented. And Dennis Lohausen, who did the Gaia Project, Terra Mystica, A Feast for Odin, Camel Cup, and The Crown of Amara. It's published by North Star Games in the U.S. It was the 2018 Spiel des Jahre winner, which the other nominees were Gonshong Clever, which I think Kiwi likes, and Heaven and Ale, which we were not super impressed with.
Yeah, spoiler alert, if you haven't listened to, what was that, episode 7.5? 5.5?
Listen in order, if you want to avoid spoilers.
Too late, you've already spoiled it.
The description is, welcome to Quedlinburg.
Quedlinburg.
What am I saying? Quid?
Quid.
Quid, yeah, like money. Welcome to Quedlinburg, where the best quack doctors gather to brew potions to cure smelly feet, homesickness, and hiccups. You're one of them. Your challenge is to make a special brew that will make you the best miracle doctor in all the land. The mechanics are deck, pool building, and pressure luck. And the box art is like a medieval marketplace looking thing with people peddling their potions. So based on this, would you pick it up off a shelf?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, it's got a medieval theme, so obviously it immediately captures my interest, and it seems interesting to think about being a quack, if you will.
Yeah, this is one that I wanted to play because, you know, I've listened to a bunch of other podcasts hearing other people talk, and then the other games that Wolfgang Warsch has designed, like, I've enjoyed. Specifically, Gonshong Clever and Doplet So Cover, which are very different. They're both roll and writes, and this is definitely not.
Yeah, I think it looks cool. It's I love the name, even though I can't say it. it's an entertaining name. I really like the box art, actually. It looks like a really festive, medieval-y. I don't know. Like, of all the medieval games we've played, I really like this artwork. I think it captures, like, the colors of the medieval period that, you know, usually everything's all drab colored, but this actually has the...
Yeah, because color pigmentation would have been expensive, so normal people would not have been able to afford it.
Yeah, idiot. Yeah, I get what Eric's saying, though. Like, a lot of media and all that kind of makes it look like
the
probably
ages.
What it really was, which is just drab, dreary, and just another day closer to death.
Mm-hmm.
This makes it look like it was actually fun to live in the medieval period. Well, if I learned anything from Jeff Engelstein and his game tech, blue would have been the hardest one to make. So this guy on the right with his blue striped tapestries or cloth, he's clearly the richest.
Yeah. Red's pretty easy because there's certain kind of bugs you can get red pigment from.
Yeah, well, how about a little bit of, I mean, do we need more history? Bugs and Jeff Engelstein?
Well, I feel like I have given a little bit, but I mean, it was interesting because when Kiwi was telling me first about it and about the whole kind of charlatan ideas and these cure-alls that cure nothing kind of idea. I mean, medieval medicine may have had some kind of herbal mixtures. But I mean, if you had a serious disease in the medieval period, you probably went on a pilgrimage to find one of the more powerful saints to clear you of said disease. You know, leprosy, sterility, syphilis, those were all kind of the purview, if you will, for many of the local saints. So I expect some kind of relics to maybe pop up in this as well would be pretty great.
Well, wasn't that a thing, too? Like, you could go to the king, and the king would touch you, and that was supposed to help cure you of, like, leprosy and stuff?
So, yeah, so it's the French kings, though. And I think eventually the British did pick up on that as well. And it's a specific skin disease. I always forget what it's called. It starts with an S. But, yeah, And so in Louis the Ninth was one of the big ones for that as well. But I mean, monks did have medicinal gardens, and which were basically herb gardens for, you know, kind of your normal natural path kind of mixology. But medieval medicine would have really picked up after the Crusades, when there was a lot more interaction with the Islamic world, which was far more advanced, right, in all things scientific and mathematics, because of the ability to interchange between India and kind of the Greek classics as well. So,
does it have anything to do with Pliny the Elder?
No. In fact, I mean, if you're talking medicine, you're probably talking, right, Hippocrates. So,
okay. Because pretty much every other episode of Sawbones mentions Pliny the Elder.
He wrote a lot of stuff.
Yes, that's what I've learned from Sydney.
Yes.
Shout out to Sawbones.
Yeah, so there's your double. We need some saints. We need some holy kings. And apparently a whole lot of rich people making colorful marketplaces.
There you go. Rules to live by.
All right, how do you play this kooky game?
All right, how do we play? Okay, the game consists of 9 rounds, and as is traditional amongst most games, the player with the most points is going to be the winner. Each round is broken into 2 phases, the potion phase and the evaluation phase. So before the game begins, every player is going to have an ingredient bag, and it's going to be filled with 9 chips. You're going to have a bunch of white chips, a orange chip, and a green chip. And these chips are going to have different values on them. So during the potion to begin the round, the start player is going to draw a fortune teller card, and that's going to affect all the players. And then starting with round 2, you'll get to throw in rat tails into your potion to try and fill your potion up. So during the potion phase, you're going to draw chips out of your bag. You can't look in your bag. You're just going to draw them out. So it's a little bit like Orleone or Altiplano in that regard. And then you're going to place it along the track on your potion board based on the value that's on the chip. So like if you draw a 3 white chip, you would place it 3 spaces away from the last chip that you placed. And you're going to do this until you do one of 3 things. You reach the end of your track. Your white chips equal 7 or greater on their value, in which case your potion explodes. Or you decide to just stop and just be good with where it's at. Every player does have a flask, so you can kind of put away one of the white chips that you draw, as long as it didn't cause your potion to explode. Some of the chips, red, yellow, and blue, you get immediate actions when you place them. The rest of them are going to go in the evaluation phase. So once every player is finished, either because their potion's exploded, they've reached the end, or they've decided to stop, we go into the evaluation phase. And it's broken up into 6 different parts. The first one, the player who reached the highest scoring space gets to roll a bonus die. Then you go into the second one, which is beginning with the start player. Players look to see if they have any black, green, or purple chips, and they get the action or the benefit associated with that color and its recipe book. And you get to do that regardless of your potion exploded. Anybody who has a ruby on their score space will gain a ruby. At this point, players whose potions exploded, they have to decide on which of the 2 phases they're going to do next. So they get one or the other. So the first one is, beginning with the start player, you gain victory points based on your scoring space. And or you can purchase 1 or 2 additional chips based on your scoring space. So like if the scoring space, say you made it to space 15, you would get 15 coins to buy ingredients. And all those ingredients are going to have recipe books, and they're going to tell you how much a chip is worth based on its value. And the only rule is if you buy 2 chips, you can't buy the same color. And then finally, players can spend their rubies to move their droplet, which is your start space on your potion. You can move it forward a space, and you can do that as many times as you have rubies. Or you can do both. You can pay 2 rubies to refill your flask. And then once the evaluation phase is complete, the turn indicator is moved forward, and then we start the round over. And then some of the rounds have specific things that we do in addition. So in turns 2 and 3, we're going to reveal the yellow book and then the purple ingredient book. Turn 6, everybody's going to get an additional white 1-value chip. And then during potion phase 10 or 9, the last one, players are going to simultaneously draw from their bag. The start player is going to say, stir, and then everybody reveals what they drew.
I hope we actually say it just like that. Stir!
We will. And if we don't, I'll refuse to play. And at the end of the turn, players may spend their coins on victory points. So for every coin you have, you can spend 5 to gain 1 victory point, or you can spend 2 rubies for a victory point. And then whoever's furthest ahead on the score track is the winner.
So rat tails?
Yeah, rat tails, starting with turn 2, there's a scoreboard. And based on who's ahead, the player in first can't do any rat tails. But there's like little rats on the scoreboard that have tails that stick into the score track. So say there's 2 rat tails between, you know, whoever's in last and whoever's in first. That person who's in last can throw in 2 rat tails. And basically what it does is there's a rat tail token that you'll place on your tracker. So you'll be able to start your potion further ahead along your track. So it's kind of a catch-up mechanic.
Let's play.
Let's stir.
Stir!
So we just finished a game of the Quacks of Quedlinburg. To recap, Kiwi had 41 points, BP had 44, and I won with 54 points. My strategy was draw lucky.
It's a good strategy.
That's all I got.
I was trying to go for the pumpkins and the toadstools, just because, you know, drawing the pumpkins made the toadstools go further. But then I saw like the stuff that you guys had, and you're like, it was doing good stuff for you. And I was just like, ooh, I want some of those chips. And it like totally messed up my strategy. I had like too much of stuff.
I don't think you meant like what was going on mine, because obviously I did not have a lot of good stuff going on.
Well, you had the purple one. That helped
yeah,
out.
Yeah, you were the only one with purple.
BP had a couple really bad rounds where she just drew all of the garlic chips and blew up had to stop. Which, like, this is my thing with engine builders, is, like, if you have a rough beginning, sometimes it's really hard to catch up.
I don't know, and I think just with the push my luck, I mean, there were a couple of times where it was just like, you know, you make that call, and you're just like, I'm going to go for it.
Yeah, I think we all pushed our luck a bit.
Yeah.
I had a couple of really good rounds where, like, the little blue chips that let me draw 4 and select again, like, just chained off of each other. Or in the last round, I had a bunch of ones where I got to put back the white chips, so... I mean, it just kind of, I don't know what I was doing, but it kind of worked out at the end where I had a couple good rounds. So I must have done something right.
Yeah. Plus you guys got a lot more rubies than I did in the beginning. So you got to have your droplet thing.
The droplet move forward.
Move forward. The only time it ever worked for me was when I was so far behind, I got all those rat tails.
Yeah.
What did you think about the theme?
I was wondering what BP thought, because I think, I wish I could remember what she said at the beginning, but that she brought up, like, based on the picture and the theme or the description of the game, she was hoping there was going to be, I wish I could remember what it was. She was like, I hope there's a thing in the game. And like, since I had read the rules, like I knew it wasn't there.
Saints relics.
Yeah, relics.
You guys.
Yeah, relics.
Relics.
What'd you think of the theme?
I thought it was fun. You know, I don't know. I feel like this is more witch's brew than actual medieval medicine. But, and especially for we're recording this, you know, I mean, places are starting to get Halloween stuff put up, even if that's still a couple months away. But at least when we're recording it, it seems to be very fitting. So, I like that. I like that aspect of, I would think more witch's brew than I feel like.
Yep. Which is funny you said that, because that's what I've read about this is like, this seems like a witch theme would have fit much better.
Mm-hmm.
Not, I don't know, so much better. Like, it works, but witches just seems to click more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they were sticking with this sort of quacks thing, like maybe actually having ailments or something like that, where you're trying to, I don't know, like the fact that you're missing the actual medicine part and you're just doing the brewing part, it doesn't quite click, I think.
Yeah, when I initially saw the pictures, like having had not read the rules and like saw the recipe books, like I thought you were like actually trying to put things in to create a recipe, you know, like, oh, you need like two green chips and a red chip and you make this recipe and then you try to sell them.
Like in a like a video game where you're actually like doing like the potion crafting and you're trying to like build a recipe or something. Yeah.
Yeah, like potion explosion would be was kind of closer to what I thought, where you're trying to collect the different colored marbles to create a specific potion.
Yep.
And that's what I thought more this was going to be.
Yeah.
So I think, I think like a witch theme would work better, but I thought it was fun.
Yeah, no, yeah. I thought it was
I mean, it's still good. Like, I don't dislike it. I just, it didn't quite click to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Theme-wise.
And there's no like town market really for it either. I mean, I guess kind of, you get to buy more tokens, but it doesn't seem like you were selling to get those. So again, witch's theme, you could be going out and collecting, right? More black moths or whatever. Yeah.
Like my guess is kind of when you don't explode your potion and you sell it and you get the money, then that would be like you're selling the potion.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But the fact that you can also do it when it explodes, it just, I mean, it's one of those themes like it's almost there, but it's like one step off, I feel like. How about the art and components?
Well, I know components wise, there are cardboard chits and there's places that like, I think BGG has like an upgrade kit with plastic tokens to kind of give more of a feel to the game. I think the art works and I think the components fit for what it's gonna. I could see like the cardboard pieces kind of getting gross if you play the game a ton. You're sticking in your hand, you're handling all the cardboard chits a whole bunch.
Oh, it's so like as a bag builder with cardboard. Yeah, I could see that.
So you might want to like upgrade your pieces so that they don't get grimy and gross and start falling apart, depending on how much you play the game.
Right, yeah, I could see that. But overall, I think it's pretty good. I really like the pot. Like, I think that looks really cool, how they spiraled it out and it's like bubbling. And I think that looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I like all the little booklets with the little drawings. Those are nice.
Yeah, the booklets are cool.
I mean, but again, I think it's really fitting of that witch's Halloween kind of theme.
Yeah, and the nice part about the books is so there's like four tiers of books. So they have like little bookmarks at the bottom. So the black is based on player count. The orange is always the same. But then the other five ingredients are basically like when you start the game, you decide like, okay, we're going to play with the series one or series two. So then you would play with all the books that have that number of bookmarks. So it gives variability to it. So like every game can be slightly different. You have like four versions. And then with the fortune teller cards, I thought that brought a lot of it. Cause that there's, what is there? 24. So that adds variability too.
Yep. So how about the mechanics?
I think we all kind of enjoy that push your luck aspect where you just,
yep.
You want to like just keep going, and it's like, when do you want to be safe, and when do you want to, you know? Yeah.
Yep. I think it kind of triggers that same stress as the real times, where like that fun stress, like it's the same thing with push your luck, I think.
Which is funny because I don't think any of us are like really big gamblers, too. Like, but
no, but it's fun when it's actually attached to a fun game, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
This is only the second push your luck game we've played, right? Is Fire in the Library. Have we played any other Push Your Luck games?
Not that I can think of.
Yeah, I can't think of any either.
And then I always kind of like deck builder, bag builder type games.
Yeah, the bag builders, like I think this is definitely...
Yeah, this is a good one.
Yep. Because I mean, the other ones we played, Orleone,
Altiplano, they're a little too serious, I think. This is a little lighter and a little bit more fun. Did you think it could be a bit much, though, trying to remember what all the little things are?
Yeah,
like the little bonuses and things,
especially like if they happened at the end or in play. I feel like if that could be a little bit more consistent, like they all happened at the end or they happened in play.
Or if there was a better symbol, like either on the token or on the recipe book to like let you know, like maybe instead of have the recipe book colored, because like each of the books is colored, like the book binding, I guess, the book cover matches the symbol, like maybe having it so that that border was a specific color to say like, hey, if it's gold, that means it happens during the round. Mm-hmm. So when you draw it, you could immediately look and be like, oh, this does something right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was bad. It just kind of felt a little, like, another thing that like is a little bit to remember, like this at the start, this at the end, this during.
Yeah.
But it wasn't too bad. Once you got the hang of it, I thought it was okay.
Yep.
And then one thing I really liked was the catch-up mechanics. So you had the rat tails, which I thought was really helpful to kind of even things out.
I mean, there was also let me beat Kiwi.
Yep. Yeah. And then there was also one of the cards that let BP catch up when she was behind based on rat tails. So
yeah,
I thought there was a lot of good catch-up mechanics that kept it fair. Like it wasn't like crazy. Like it didn't. It's one of those things like the catch-up helped BP and it didn't take away from us, which is
right.
Or I should say the first place person. Whereas like, you know, sometimes they're negative impact on people and that's not as fun.
Right.
And then for the rules, I think they were pretty good. There's, I don't know, how was the wording on the cards, BP?
I think there was, there's that one, the mandrake one that kept throwing me off the way that it was worded. I guess the picture kind of helps, but yeah.
Oh, for the power that it does?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the mandrake lets you, if you draw it immediately after a white token, you can remove that white token and put it back in the bag.
Right, but the way it's worded said something about last. And I was thinking that was the last token drawn versus the one immediately prior. That was it.
Yep.
That's it.
Right. Yeah.
And it cleared up in the rule book.
Yeah.
Because it specifically says, like, if you draw it immediately after, what's it say? It says, if you draw a yellow chip from your bag directly after a white chip.
Yeah.
So that wording is much better than what's on the recipe book.
All right. How about player interaction?
This is one I think you're normally keen on.
I thought it was, I mean, there's a decent amount of it. It's not a lot, but I think some of the fortune teller card things kind of tried to add a little bit in, like if the player on your left does this, then that kind of thing. But overall, there's not much. You're kind of just in your own, in your own world. And not to say like I wasn't paying it. There's a good kind of like I was watching what everyone was doing because like I might draw and stop and then I'd watch. Oh, what is Kiwi going to do? Is he going to explode or, you know, that kind of thing. But because of the simultaneous play and then just not very much direct interaction, I'd say it's pretty low. Not as much as I would like in a game.
Yeah, I would say that if you're watching somebody, that's not player interaction.
Right.
That's just,
well, I mean, there's some games where I totally don't even know what somebody else is doing. And those are the worst to me, player interaction wise. But so it is at least better when I'm interested in the other players. But I wouldn't say it's like great interaction.
Yeah, I would agree. But I think the game's fun enough that until we started talking about it right now, I wasn't really worried about player interaction during the game. Yeah.
And they don't all, like, I don't want every game to be like a ton of interaction.
Right.
So it's okay to have like, you know, some more minimal ones when you just don't feel like peopling.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think I agree. I think it was engaging enough where it wasn't like we're just waiting for that person to take their turn so we can take our turn. You know,
exactly. That's when it gets, it's like, oh, man, I don't know what you're doing. I don't care what you're doing. I just need you to say, OK, I'm done so I can go.
Right.
Yeah, that's when it makes me question why you're bothering playing a game with other people.
Right.
All right. Would you play it again?
Absolutely. Maybe this time I might do better. I don't know.
I never know. You never know what's gonna happen.
I know. I think I'm beginning to really like pressure luck game.
I would absolutely play it again. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really liked it. I like the pressure luck. I like it's got some chaos element to it that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. Like you don't quite know what's gonna happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I thought it was fun.
Yeah. I think this is one of those games where like we play it and it's just like, okay, I can definitely understand why this was the Kinderspiel.
Yeah, you play Gonshun Clever.
You guys have played one of the two.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is pretty obvious for us. It beats Heaven and Ale, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How do you think it matched to Gonshun Clever?
I mean, it's the same designer, but they're like totally different games. But I could see why this one won over Gonshun Clever, but I really enjoy both.
Which would you pick if you were the voter?
I probably would have picked Quacks of Quedlinburg.
Oh, okay, cool. Because I know you really like Gonshun Clever.
But I really liked this one too.
Okay, that's cool. I guess Wolfgang Warsch had a really good year that year.
Yeah, he crushed it.
Yeah. All right, well, there you go. That is Quacks of Quedlinburg. Up next, we're going to be playing Biblios, designed by Steve Finn of Herbaceous. The artist is David Palumbo of Magic the Gathering, Condottiere.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it, and then I saw somebody tweet about it yesterday, and I was just like, oh, weird.
Coincidences. The publisher is Yellow. The description is, you are an abbot of a medieval monastery competing with other abbots to amass the greatest library of sacred books.
Yay!
To do so, you need to have both the workers and the resources to run a well-functioned scriptorium. To acquire workers and resources, which is worker placement, isn't it?
I know, right?
use a limited supply of donated gold. In addition, you must be on the good terms with a powerful bishop who can help you in your quest. The mechanics are auction bidding, card drafting, hand management, pressure luck, and set collection. Oh, so no worker placement.
No worker placement. Yeah.
But another pressure luck, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
Didn't even go for a theme on this one, and we pulled it off. So the box art looks like a medieval library with some monks looking at some books.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple of things, like looking, I mean, obviously I've got a history thing and obviously I'm super excited. Monks, monasteries, and books. But for those of you who have read Patrick Rothfuss, The King Killer Chronicles?
Yep.
The monks, of course, they have candles because, right, that's their lighting that they had in a library.
Yeah, sympathy candles.
Well, these are real.
sympathy lamps.
Right, but these are real candles. So, right.
Right.
You
would never have a real candle in the library.
Right.
You'd get kicked out so fast.
Yes, fire in the library. Another game. Okay, sorry. I got distracted.
Can I ask the question now?
Yes.
So based on this, would you pick it up off of a shelf?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we got that.
Kiwi?
It's a little boring. I probably would not.
You're a little boring.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Based on the mechanics, I might be into it.
The description, though, I think we were all thinking worker placement.
Yeah, the description wasn't quite what I thought. It also didn't really excite me that much. And the art is kind of goes with the description. But it looks like it's right up BP's alley.
Mm-hmm. I'm very excited.
So tell us why.
Okay. So, well, one, also a couple of reasons. Umberto Eco, one of my favorite authors of all time, of course, wrote the book, The Name of the Rose, which also, when you were reading the description, kind of reminded me of, there is also a movie version of that with Sean Connery and Christian Slater. And that's fantastic and talks about kind of the competition of monasteries being able to collect, usually in that instance, kind of illicit books, if you will, and having them sometimes be poisoned. But the description also reminded me, and this is what I had prepared, was one of the oldest libraries in our Western history, I should say, the Library of Alexandria in Egypt, started under the Ptolemies, but was known as like one of the greatest libraries in the ancient world. Basically, I mean, Alexandria right on the port of the Mediterranean with all of the trade going on in the ancient world, which there was actually a lot of. Basically, any ship that came into port, if it had any type of books on it, they were confiscated until they were copied. And kind of the whole point of the library was to try to amass like the world's knowledge. This library is also where the Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible took place. It's also where we get our word for museum, because the muses were part of the concept of the library. And then the library itself eventually burned, but some of the books were saved. And then when Islamic scholars took over Egypt, they are also really large on copying books. And so we just, from this library, still have tons of copies of ancient works that were, you know, translated into Greek and then into Arabic, and now are being researched. And so it's fantastic, that whole idea of collecting books and knowledge. And I love libraries.
Woo, libraries.
They are so amazing.
How about the rules?
All right. So the goal of Biblios is to have the most victory points. Shock. Victory points are earned by having the highest value in each of the five categories. So there's pigments, holy books, monks, manuscripts, and forbidden tomes.
Wait, so you can have monks?
Yes, like you're collecting monks.
You're collecting monks.
Well,
got it.
Let's say hire.
Okay.
You're hiring monks.
Attract.
Attract. I'll go with that. The victory points are earned for each category, and it's indicated by the associated die. So in the middle of the table, there's a board with five die color-coded to the specific category, and they're all going to start at the value of three. And during the game, there's going to be cards that we can adjust those values up or down. So you can make a category worth more or another category worth less. And at the end of the game, what we're going to do is we're going to compare. So the red is forbidden tomes. So we would all add up the values of our red cards, and whoever has the highest value gets that die and the associated victory points that die is showing. And then whoever has the most wins. So this one had kind of a boring first player selection. It was just first player is chosen by any method.
Can it be the last person to be in a library?
I'm going to go with yes.
Sweet.
Okay. All right, Eric, so you get to go first. all right, so that player is going to be the active player. There's going to be a deck of cards, and the first half of the game is going to be the gift phase. And so we're each going to take turns allocating cards, and the number of cards allocated are based on the number of players. So in our case, with three players, we're going to allocate four cards. So you have to allocate at least one to yourself, one to the auction pile, and one to the public space. And then any leftover cards are also going to go to the public space. Now, the interesting part is you have to draw the cards one at a time, and you have to allocate them without knowing what's going to come after. So if I draw the first card and allocate it to myself, I can no longer allocate any of the three cards to myself. Right? So it's going to be one to yourself, one to the public space, and one to the auction pile. Now, the one to the auction pile is going to be face down. The one to the public space is going to be face up. Because what's going to happen is once the active player has allocated all the cards, the other players are going to get to select a card from the public space. So everyone's going to be able to know what you picked because that card is face up. So we're going to go clockwise around the table, just trading off who's the active player until we get to all the cards in the draw pile are empty. And that's going to end the gift phase. And then we go to the auction phase. We're going to shuffle up the auction pile. And then we're going to draw a card one at a time from the auction pile. The active player is going to start with, in this case, BP. It's going to start with BP again. She's going to draw a card. And then whoever is to her left will be the one who starts the bid. So for all the cards, except for gold, you're going to bid the gold that is in your hand. So the gold cards will have values. So say I have a 2 and a 3, I could bid 5, and then I would just discard those two cards that add up to 5, the gold cards. If a gold card is being auctioned, you're going to bid cards to discard from your hand. So you'd say, like, I bid 3 cards, and then that's what I would have to pay. And then we just do that until all the cards in the auction pile are gone, and then that ends the auction phase. There is one exception in both phases, and that's if a church card is taken. So the church card is going to have, in the top left, it's going to have either a -1 or a +1. And the top right, it's going to have a number of dice. So it could have 1 die or 2 dice. And basically what it means is during the gift phase, if you give that to yourself, play is going to stop. And then you're going to be able to adjust the dice for the victory points on the board. So say you had a church card that let you increase 1 die by 1. We would stop play. You'd adjust the die, discard the church card, and then continue play. And then once the auction phase is over, players add up the values of their cards in each category, and then we dole out the victory dice.
I'm so excited. Let's play!
So we just finished a game of Biblios. To recap, Kiwi won with 8 points, BP was second with 5, and I had 2. Kiwi, what was your winning strategy?
Man, I don't know. Like, I started getting blue and green cards, and so I just was like, I'll try and do that. And then I tried to throw you guys off by taking a red card, and I guess it worked.
I feel like the church cards came in handy with your strategy.
But did you know what you were raising? Because you lowered red.
Yeah,
and then it seemed like you were just randomly raising the other ones.
I did about halfway through, and then I realized that I had a decent amount in those, and so I tried to raise those. I lowered green because I only had 4 green, and I was concerned somebody else had more. But it looked like I didn't see any cards like above 2. So it looked like the green ones were pretty low. Mm-hmm. And then the red, I started lowering the red because like that was the first card that Eric took was a red card. So I was just like, screw that guy, I'm lowering red.
I didn't even know that. I kind of just avoided the churches because I had no idea what was going on. So I was like, I don't know what to raise or lower.
Yeah.
And then I thought the auction would play a bigger role. So I had a decent amount of gold and I was expecting, oh, by then I'll know what I want and I'll just bid on those and figure it out. But then our auction was all gold, so I didn't really do anything.
I think I was going for set collection, so I did focus on some colors and then finally saw a blue one pop up and got kind of distracted by that. But then I don't think I had enough gold for the auction to try to get those back. And then, yeah, I apparently went overboard on those monks, but they were worth like so much. I was thinking like, this has gotta get me. But then the whole dice thing, like I got 2 different colors, but they were low number on the dice. So,
all right. So what did you think of the theme?
What theme?
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
I really like the idea of the theme.
Sure.
Yeah, they just didn't do anything with it.
Yeah. You literally could have made it anything.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of forgot. Yeah, I mean, I tried to play it with the auction part, but then it didn't really make sense that we were auctioning monks. So that wasn't even fun when I tried to play the auctioneer.
Yeah,
it was just awkward.
Yeah.
I don't know, there's much else to say. There's no theme. It could have just been colored yeah. objects.
Yeah, you could pick anything that you would find at an auction.
I mean, you don't even need to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't. None of this is true. Stuff. The books, maybe, but otherwise it's not things that you would get in an auction.
Yeah, I feel like this goes back to whether we buy or hire people. We were literally auctioning people. Like, it's just, it's wrong.
But not just that, but it was like, this is a conch shell. So, like, I guess it's stuff for mortar and pestle. Like, you wouldn't be doing that at an auction?
Well, I think that's pigment is what the blue is.
Oh. Yeah. I guess we finished the game and I don't know what any of the things were, and that should sum up the theme.
Yep, that's valid.
Quick question. So the blue and the brown are separated on the thing. Are they supposed to be more valuable?
I don't know why they're separated. It does not say that.
My guess was that maybe these are rarer, which there weren't a lot of blue cards, but there were a ton of monk cards.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess that will go into art. What did you think of the art?
It was boring.
I didn't really pay attention to it.
Yeah.
And graphically, it was a little weird.
Yeah, some of the colors didn't match, like the gold and the yellow. So you had to go off the icons.
Yeah, again, why are those two separated on the player board?
I mean, I like images of books.
Yeah, but you could have made more interesting images of books.
Sure.
So I think they're separated because there's in the rule book, there's like a distribution of cards. Mm-hmm. So there are more higher value blue and brown cards.
Okay. All right. How about mechanics?
I mean, I guess section collection is there, but it's different than what BP was thinking. So I feel like set collection was sort of a misnomer-ish.
Well, and what about price your luck? I mean, is that because you set stuff up for auction or bidding?
Yeah, I think the press your luck is like, maybe if you take the first card that you draw, card 2, 3, or 4 could have been something better.
But I feel like that's still just like almost hand-in-hand. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I maybe press your luck in the sense of like you got a ton of monks and you didn't really need that many, but you're like, I don't know how many other people have, so maybe right. I shouldn't.
I feel like that's still like missing hand management. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. Yeah.
It's, I feel like, because I always understood pressure luck, like you are going to keep going to a certain point and then you're going to like, you know, explode, set something on fire, right? There's going to be like this point you go off.
It's like an all or nothing thing. Like, yeah. I'm going to, you know, do I get one more or do I quit now? It didn't really invoke. And like I was saying in Quacks, like you had that sort of like, you know, stress rush of like, oh, do I keep going or not? And it didn't really, I think pressure luck should invoke that. And this did not.
Yeah. Especially coming off Quacks, like the pressure luck aspect definitely wasn't there.
Right. Otherwise, I mean, the whole, you know, kind of predicting and upping the die. I like that piece of like, oh, I think I'm going to go for blue. Let me up that. It kind of, but I think I enjoyed it more in a game like Raccoon Tycoon where you're,
yeah, the speculation.
Yeah. Like I thought it would, I think it's a cool mechanic. I just don't, I mean, like I said, I didn't have a good enough idea of what I was trying to do to use that mechanic. So I just didn't do it.
Yeah. The big difference is in Raccoon Tycoon, you can see what everybody else has.
Yeah.
So you know, like, okay, I'm going to lower coal because BP has a ton of coal. Whereas this one, you're just like, well, I saw Eric take a red card, so I'm just going to lower red because screw that guy.
Yeah, but that was, I don't know. Maybe I wasn't paying enough attention because I didn't know what was going on, but that didn't really happen for me.
No, you screwed me instead.
I didn't do anything intentionally if I did it. What'd you think of kind of the phases things where you do this whole kind of card drafting round and then an auction round kind of thing?
I mean, it was different.
Yeah. I like the concept.
Yeah.
And I feel like we played a couple games recently that there were like these two distinct phases or three phases.
Yeah.
Which I do kind of like.
Especially like your first time because you don't know really what's going to happen in the next phase.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky on a first playthrough.
But yeah, no, I like that. It mixes it up.
Rules. I mean, I guess they were straightforward. I didn't really know what was going on very much in the game. I think it might be a game where you got to play through it once. And maybe it's because of the whole phase thing, but I have to like play through to really I don't know. It didn't really click for me for whatever reason.
And we did feel like we also may have miscounted some of the cards because we had that thing at the end where we were like, this isn't a full round. What are we supposed to do?
So I think we were supposed to take cards out.
Yeah, because of the player count.
Yep.
Yeah, because anytime you have card drafting, you tend to have to adjust the deck. So yeah. We may have screwed that piece up. So I don't know. Like, what did you think, Kiwi? Was it?
I mean, I think like rules wise, like the rule book itself is not that long. It explains it well. I just don't know if everything works together.
All right. Player interaction.
I'm going to be honest, you guys. I started surfing the internet.
Okay.
So I felt it move fast enough that I couldn't get distracted, but there were a few times where I started to and I just ran out of time. Yeah, I mean, I guess there is interaction. I guess you could be watching what other people are taking, that kind of thing. But I just didn't. I wasn't into it enough, I guess, to do that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, which is really sad since I was so excited about this.
Yeah, because I mean, there's the option for interactions there a little bit in that you're doing some drafting and there's always at least a little bit of like hate drafting mechanic in there anytime there's card drafting. And then the dice, if you're figuring out what people are doing, you could be manipulating the dice. But at no point did I know what anyone else was doing. So I didn't pay attention to do any of that. I didn't really know what I was doing.
Yeah. And I mean, I was paying attention just because like I was the one driving like, all right, it's your turn to do it or it's, you know, time to do this.
Yeah. You're kind of running the game. So you had to pay a little bit more attention.
Yeah.
Which also goes to show like if somebody has to kind of run the game, it's. I feel like that only occurs in games where we're drifting off and not really paying attention.
Yeah.
Would you play it again?
Really, really like the idea of the game.
But would you play it again?
No, it was not very fun.
If someone walked up to me and said, hey, do you want to play Biblios or Skull?
I would pick Biblios.
I would pick Biblios.
In no other situation would I pick Biblios.
I mean, I feel like there's something there. I just didn't have fun playing it. So, and I feel like, I mean, we've already mentioned, hey, I like this mechanic, but I like it here better. So like I would, if I was in the mood for speculation, I'd go play Raccoon Tycoon or one of the other million price speculation games that are out there.
Yeah.
Or auction games. And if I wanted to do card drafting, I'd, you know, do a cat lady or something light. I don't know.
Yeah, I just feel like I kind of wish we had started with this game so that we could have a pickup with Quacks. It's kind of just like, we're going out on a low point.
What else?
We tend to not like games that don't have strong themes or thematic elements to them. So that just might be the case here.
I feel like it just makes the game easier to play when that thematic link is there. Cause then like you get it like, oh, I know why I'm doing action A because like it simulates this.
Right.
This just didn't have it. Like I didn't.
Yeah. And then also like if the game maybe isn't clicking very well, like you can at least play up the theme part, which I tried to do with the auctioning, but it didn't work. So
yeah.
There you go. That's Biblios.
Yep. That's it.
I don't know. Well, if you would like to recommend any press your luck games or even speculation games, send your thoughts or comments our way at the Twitter or Instagram. We are at First Turn Cast. And hopefully you press your luck with some good games out there.
Ah, son of a bitch.
Did you explode?
Yes.
Ah, shit.
Did you explode too, BP?
Yes.
Pull. Start.
Pull.
I said pull like we're doing shotguns. Start. You open the bidding, Barrick.
Did you say Barrick?
I did.
He's mixing us together. I did, Eric, indeed. Barrick.
So we just finished a game of the Quacks of Quedlinburg.
Still don't. Still not sure that's it.